Okay, we try to do as best as we can to a sugya that really is a 157 block long, namely Masechet Shabbos, as it relates to child care, baby care on Shabbos, and Yom Tov extension, so throw another 40 block into Masechet Beitza, throw 105 block Erev, we'll talk a little bit about carrying babies on Shabbos, so a lot of different Shabbos and Yom Tov Shilas. We'll try to knock it all off in the next hour plus a few minutes, let's see where we get. So when we speak about taking care of children, babies, and older children, younger children on Shabbos, so we have to familiarize ourselves with really some of the ABCs, some of the basic issues that come up in general Malachas and Shabbos. So we're going to be focusing as they relate to children, but obviously we're going to have to get some background in terms of regular Hichlul Shabbos as well. So one of the biggest challenges to children on Shabbos and Yom Tov is how to feed them, what to feed them. That's basically what babies do most of the time, is they eat, they sleep, and they cry. So a major component of child care is what to feed children. So one shah that comes up in terms of feeding young babies, a little bit older children as well, is one malacha, and that's the malacha, one possible, multiple malachas. One of the malachas is the malacha of teichen, malacha of grinding. So maybe wondering, grinding, what does that have to do with babies? So the Gemara tells us in Masechet Shabbos that if one takes a piece of food and cuts it into little pieces, we're not talking about a vegetable, one takes a vegetable and cuts it into little pieces, so that is a potential malacha of teichen. Now, the truth to be told is that there are some Rishonim who don't read the Gemara the way that some Rishonim will learn that the Gemara is not even talking about cutting food, it's talking about something entirely different. But in Shulchan Aruch, we follow the first view. We follow the view that most of the Rishonim present that there is a potential malacha d'araisa of teichen involved. What is malacha's teichen? Teichen is to take a big piece and cut it into little pieces, so that's called the teichen. So too, you take a cucumber, cut it little pieces, take a tomato, cut it little pieces, that's potentially called the malacha teichen. That, of course, raises a potential challenge. But when feeds young children, you want to cut into little pieces. You don't want to get the choke, so you want to cut into little pieces. So how do we get around some of the issues of teichen relating to this? So the Rishonim have already raised a question as to just how little pieces. It's just intuitively obvious that if you take, let's say, you take an apple and you cut it into half, that's not called teichen. You cut it into quarters, it's probably not called teichen either. At what point do we say that something has reached a point of being very, very small? So the Rishonim say it has to be dak-dak. So the question is, at what point do we say it's reached that degree of dak-dak? So don't feel bad, because the Rishonim themselves weren't sure. The Sefer Yoreim, the Talmud Rabbeinu Tam writes, that he doesn't know. He doesn't know at what point we're going to say it's called mamish dak. Very hard to tell. So if a person cuts things into fairly large slices, it's clearly going to be okay. Once you start to get into that gray area, then you run into a problem. So how could we alleviate the problem a little bit better than what we just said? So there was a famous Shittas HaRashba. So the Rashba's opinion is that the malacha of teichen, as it relates to cutting up fruit and vegetables into little pieces, only applies if it's not being done in the immediate context of the seuda. If one does it right before one eating, so then that's permissible. We had the Rashba come up to say such a thing, so he derived it from the malacha of borer. Gemara has in Shabbos the Ayin Dalet that when it comes to malachas borer, that if you separate things in certain manners, if it's done right before the meal, then it's going to become mutter. Not always, but that's a mitigating factor of malachas borer. Why is that? So the Rishonim explained that borer is a funny kind of a malacha. It's a malacha that if it's done in a certain context, it's called derech achila. If it's done in another context, it's called derech malacha. So one of the factors that's involved in determining whether what you're doing is called derech malacha, derech achila, is just how close to the suda is it. So if it reaches the criteria that's called sabach suda, that's a factor. It's not the only factor in Bayer, but it is a significant factor. So the Rashba said that idea carries over to teichen as well. That if you cut up a vegetable and you put it aside and you eat it 5 hours from now, that's potentially the malacha of teichen. But if you're sitting at the table and you're cutting up your vegetables to eat, and also you can eat it right away, that's not called derech malach, that's called derech achila, and that would be permissible. So that would be a good heter, assuming that we would accept that heter. So other Rishonim say the lohayut v'me'elam. Other Rishonim said that ein lo l'chadesh shem heter. The Gemara has a hever, mehekates, it applies to teichen. There are certain malachas that obviously doesn't apply. So let's say with a person who has a lot of cook, as long as they're cooking right away, so that's absurd. So obviously certain malachas don't lend themselves to derech achila. So how do you know which do and which don't? So that's, you have to be a rashba to be able to say such a thing. And other Rishonim say that they don't think that is correct. So how do we pass in malacha in the Shabbos? The Mishnah Berurah writes that we're not 100% sure that the Rashba is right. On the other hand, the Mishnah Berurah says we're not 100% sure that we ever really have a problem with teichen in the first place, because when we cut fruits and vegetables, we don't cut them so small anyway. So the Mishnah Berurah says he thinks that what you can do is as follows. He thinks that if it's right before the Seuda, and you cut it into pieces that are probably big enough anyway, you're not 1,000% sure, so you don't want to rely on that kula itself, but if you cut it into fairly larger pieces than usual, and it's being done right before the Seuda, so that he thinks you have a right to be made. We can be starif, the fact that it's probably not Daf Dak, together with the fact that it's Samach Hasuda, and those two things together should be able to put you over the edge. It should be permissible. And there are others who are even more makeful than that. The Chashulchan says that we pass like the Rashba of the Gamma. It's what the Ramah seems to say. That we pass in the Gamma like the Rashba, and therefore one could just be makel outright, even to cut small pieces.
Is there some Hasuda means like
the, that's the question. So even assuming that we're going to follow this cool of Samach Hasuda, either we're going to follow it entirely like the Rashba, or we're going to follow a mitigated vermin like a form like the Mishabura, what constitutes Samach Hasuda exactly? So the answer to that question is, well, it's a throwback from Beira. Whatever Samach Hasuda meant by Borer, that's what it means by Tov. What does it mean back by Borer? So the Rishonim have a Lashon Shah, an hour. So the Moshe writes in a Shuvah, but he doesn't think that the Rishonim meant an hour of 60 minutes on the clock. He thinks what the Rishonim meant was, is that the last thing right before the Suda. It means if a person is planning on eating lunch in 20 minutes, but before that they're going to take a walk, so he doesn't think that that would be called right away. That's not called Samach Hasuda. If they're thought they're right ready, they came home from shul, everyone's home, they're ready to get ready to sit down and eat, and then you start doing those boyer or toichen kinds of things, that's considered to be Samach Hasuda. That's what we usually follow. That should be the last possible thing right before the meal.
Why
did
Rishonim
need to Rishonim? Lefi Shah was a malitza. Lefi Shah, you know, in the days of Rishonim, people weren't walking around with watches and, you know, phones that were beeping, you know. Shah was a description of meaning, you know, a short amount of time. Sometimes the Mishnah uses specifically Shah, sometimes it uses Dal Shah, sometimes it speaks about 3 hours, 4 hours. So that obviously is very, very meduktuk. But when the Rishav just used Lefi Shah, so maybe it didn't mean that. That's what Moshe writes in Shah. Okay. Anyway, so again, there are different versions in the Poskim as to how maker we should be. So this is important. It's not that we have food for kids, to keep some of these things in mind. The Tumas Hadeshin writes that this whole issa of Tochen only applies to Gedulei Karka. At least in the realm of food, if it's not Gedulei Karka, then it wouldn't apply. What doesn't constitute Gedulei Karka for these purposes? So there is a big machlokes we've shown about how do you define Gedulei Karka. Does Gedulei Karka mean something that literally sprouts from the ground? Does Gedulei Karka mean something that grows from food that was produced from the ground? Say, for example, as an animal, is meat of a cow, is that considered Gedulei Karka? Nah. So Tosfos writes that sometimes it is and sometimes it's not. And like, so we showed him all complicated sugya of Shabbos, how we view these kinds of things. So cows eat grass that grows in the ground. We view a cow's meat as Gedulei Karka. So for these purposes, what they kill, then we assume that if a person wants to cut up a piece of meat into small pieces, that would be okay. Want to cut up a piece of chicken into very, very small pieces, that would be okay. One wouldn't have to be concerned with tochen. The only thing is that one should not use what's called the kli miyucha lekach. You shouldn't use like a grinder or something. You shouldn't use something that's designated to be used to do tochen. That's a different problem. That's a little bit of the chol pika problem. But if you want to like cut up tuna fish or something, you know, you want to make it into smaller pieces. So if you don't use a chopper, use a fork or something. So that would be okay. So this whole background in terms of tochen comes to a head when it comes to a very, very specific kind of a food. That's a common thing that sometimes people like to give kids. Sometimes they like to mash things, like to mash foods for kids. One of the famous shahs is mashing bananas. So you want to take a banana, you want to mash it up for a child, what's the din? So if you plug in all the things that we set up until now, it sounds like, hey, we can come up with some kind of ether, some chasuda, or you can come up with some kind of a way to get after it. So interestingly, there was a machlokes, the gedolei olam, gedolei apostles in the chazanish of Rav Moshe, mamash kemechek mizuch l'marav. Not only did they live 6,000 miles away from each other, but they mamash looked at bananas in two totally fundamentally different ways. Mamash gedolei olam looked at the mashing of banana in two radically different ways. So the chazanish looked at mashing of a banana, and he said that the ultimate act of toichin, you can't get more toichin than that. And therefore the Chazanish was not the biggest supporter of the Rashba in the first place. And then the Chazanish turned around and he said that he thinks even the Rashba would be machmir by mashing bananas, even some of Chasuda. Why is that? So the Chazanish says that for Medem HaMeruah it makes sense that something could be mutter some of Chasuda. Like we mentioned before, something that can go either way, something that's either derech achila derech or derech malacha. Let's say cutting a vegetable, cutting up a cucumber, so you can argue and maybe that's part of food, that's part of malach, it's hard to tell. But what if you would like grind up grain, grind up wheat or something, so make it into flour, that's for sure not called derech achim, that's for sure derech malacha. So when you have teichin mamish, says the Chazanish, even the Rashi would agree, it doesn't lend itself to the kula of derech achim, samach l'seuda. So therefore the Chazanish comes up with a big chiddush. The Chazanish claims that mashing a banana is so teichin, it's so super duper duper teichin, it's the ultimate, it's the worst teichin around since the days of Moshe Rabbeinu. Therefore, the Chazanish says that even doing Samach Hasuda will be a problem in a Torah, even according to the Rashba. So again, the Chazanish didn't think that we really hold like the Rashba in the first place, but he said even Laniach, that the Rashba is right, even the Rashba would agree in a case of mashing a banana. therefore, Meshkim Me'ad, it's Mamash Nisagom Me'ad Torah, even if it's done Sabbath Chesu'ud, according to the Chazanish. Then the Chazanish turns around and says, but the kid eats a banana, so what do you do? So the Chazanish says, very simple, Meshkim Kaliachayad, take the back of a spoon, take the back of a knife or something, and do it in an abnormal fashion, and therefore it's Mutlachet Chila. So Rav Moshe quotes this Chazanish, and he says he doesn't understand the problem, and he doesn't understand the solution. He says he doesn't understand why there was a problem in the first place with Meshkim bananas, because he doesn't think that Toichin Bechlau won. Rav Moshe said Toichin means, you take a big piece and you make it into a lot of little pieces, like grinding grain. So you take a piece of wheat and you chop it up. Now it's a million trillion little pieces of flour. Said by a banana, so you took a big fat banana and now it's one big fat chutz of mush. It's a very lumdish way of how to look at a banana. You look at a mush banana as being 10,000 different pieces, but you say it's the same chatich, it's the same chutz of a banana, albeit now it's in a mushed form. So Rav Moshe said that he thought that a mush banana, same as a whole banana. It's just one chaticha, it's not one, it's the same one chaticha, and therefore it's not subject to teichin altogether. So therefore Rav Moshe said you can even do it, shalosam chosud, it should be okay, because it's bechlal not considered to be teichin. Then Rav Moshe turned around and he said, even if the Chazanish is right, that it's really asim in a Torah, he doesn't understand how doing keliachayad is going to make him mutter. Keliachayad usually knocks things down to being a derabbanan, and it very rarely makes things being mutter legamrei. So Rav Moshe says, "The one of Shach. If the Chazanish is really right, then it should be also mit the Rabbanon, even Kaliachayat." So Rav Moshe says that he thinks the Ikra Din is not like the Chazanish. That the Ikra Din is that you're allowed to mash bananas for Gamri. But in deference to the Chazanish, he says that he thinks that we should refrain from mashing bananas, but we can do a Kaliachayat. Why? Because the Chazanish said it was okay. So even though Rav Moshe writes, he says, even though I don't understand the Heter, but quite frankly, I don't understand the Yisr anyway. So Pesha also Pesha Heter. Chazanish asked it, and he was the one who was mad for Kaliachayat. It's all Zayt and Rav Moshe. The Chavetah Chazanish will ask it, but we will matter it to Kiliachayat. So thus, from Bnei Brak to the Lower East Side, across the globe, so this has become the practice that we try not to mash bananas on Shabbos, unless we do a Kiliachayat. Again, those who are doing it, not Kiliachayat, those who never heard of this, and they're relying on Rav Moshe for Ikra Din, so it's also, Ikra Din, they want to rely on. But both the Chazanish, the Ikra Din, and Rav Moshe, the Torah, of Chashash and Chumra, recommended that we should only mash these kinds of foods if we're doing it Kiliachayah. Okay.
That's a very big. Kind of the Chazanish, how can you be matir with Doraisa Kiliachayah?
Oh, very good. So the answer is that there are certain malachas that we all matir.
Sometimes you see, like by leisure, you
there
can
are, do right, right. There are, there is certain yeah. precedent. There may even be a precedent by Teshin itself. There may even be a source by Teshin Prat.
Yeah.
It's going to lead us into the next topic about leisure. We'll get to a little bit.
Yeah.
Okay. So this is one food that the babies like to have, little cut up little fruits and vegetables and cut mashed up bananas, etc.
How about using your hands to mash the bananas?
Just don't tell your wife. That would probably be also a good issue. We're going to get to the hand by leash, we're going to get to the hand by the baby cereal. So your hands will be filthy for the baby, so you may want to wash it before you put the banana. So that...
It sounds like it's not as strong as the measure saying with a kilo do like that.
Yeah, Rav Moshe says you should look at this. He says that he thinks the Ikra Din is, he thinks the whole thing is mutter. He says you can do it mamash lechachila legamrei. But he says the Chazanish asked it as a Shabbat. He says do what the Chazanish recommends. Even though Rav Moshe writes in his tshuva, he doesn't understand what the kula is based on. So now we move on to a very, very famous food of the babies like, or babies like what we like to give it to them. It's called baby cereals. So baby cereals are kishpam kenu. It's made up of some kind of like powdery mix. There are different dargas. There's rice cereal, there's oatmeal cereal. Babies, as they develop, so they move on in life. I think what's the most up to date now? Now it's rice is the first. Rice is still the first. No, anyone? Those little babies. Lachoyus. Is it rice or oatmeal? Which one to go?
Somebody said rice. Somebody said oatmeal.
Different sheet is okay. Lachoyus a day. So what's good? Somebody was just telling me the other day. They said that in medicine, that if you're young, I don't know. Doctors, you know, except the one. Someone said to me in medicine. That if you're out of the field for 10 years, you can forget it. But you have to mums relearn. The field changes so radically that if you're out of it, not up to date with all the modern techniques, you're gone. So in halacha also, the halacha doesn't change so much, but the matzias changes so much. So my daughter's having a bas mitzvah tonight. She's 12 and haven't made a baby cereal in 12 years. So things probably have changed. But in the old days, when we used to make baby cereals, I remember we used to start with rice. I remember my mother-in-law. So she was a Yerushalmi. She grew up in the old, she was born in the old city of Yerushalayim before it was Eretz Yisrael. And it was Eretz Yisrael before it was within Eretz Yisrael. So she, in those days, they weren't go-raise baby syrups. They didn't have food for regular people, so come on. And she said she grew up on whatever her father gave her to eat. So she said she was eating meat at the age of 2 months, 3, whatever there was. Whatever there was, there wasn't. There weren't eight, whatever there was. Avemun when we had our first child, so we were explaining to this concept of Bez. It wasn't Gairis, the whole parasha of the day, too. Anyway, but more mellowed over the years. So anyway, so baby cereals are a big, big potential problem for the Shabbos, because you take these powders and you mix them with water and you make a mush. So that's a potential malacha deraisa, malacha wash. The Gemara talks about this at the very end of Masechta Shabbos, taking all kind of different powdery substances and mixing with liquids and making them to some kind of a mixture. That's a very, very serious problem, potentially, of wash. So how could we address this? Is there any way to get around these problems of wash? So we need all this ABC background, the malacha of wash. So the Gemara differentiates between different stages of the leisha process. What exactly is the moment of? What exactly is the moment of time when one violates leisha? So if you think about it, there are really two potential times. There's one time when the flour and the water, take the case, the original leisha, when the flour and the water mamish touch each other, that's potentially one moment of leisha. And the second moment of leisha is what's called the gibul, when you start to actually work on it, knead it, and really, you know, mix it together very, 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 very well. So there was a machlekes ha-tanoim, when the moment of truth is the moment of the sinas amayim, or the moment of truth is the sha'asa ha-gibul. Who cares? At the end of the day, you're going to do both. So what's the difference? So the nafkamin is as follows. The Gemara has a kula in the malach of leisha, that leisha becomes permissible. This is one of those malachas that becomes mutter. It becomes mutter if you do it kiliachayah. If you do it in an abnormal fashion, so then the malach of leisha may become totally mutter. The only thing is, you have to be very, very careful which moment do we get shinoi. Let's say if I take the cereal out of the box, standing on my head, that's not called the shinoi. The shinoi has to be done with shasa malacha. So it becomes very, very critical to pinpoint exactly when the shasa malacha is. So if you hold like those tanoim who say that the moment of truth is in the sinas amayim, so then you have to make sure you do a shinoi b'shas the sinas amayim. If you hold like those rishonim who say that the moment of truth is the gibel, then you have to make sure to do the shinoi at the time of gibel. If you choshesh for both opinions, then you would have to do what we call a double shinoi. You have to do a shinoi both at the time of sinas amayim, as well as the time of gibel, in order for this to become mutter. So how do we pask in malacha? So the answer is b'yachoshesh for both opinions. Machlokes HaRishonim, what the Maskaras of Gemara is, those who went to some Shabbos with us, we spent a lot of time in back and forth riots from Shabbos and Beitza. When all the dust settles, we're not sure what the din is, and therefore, whenever we want to do an act of Lisha and Shabbos, we want to make sure that we're clear on both fronts. We want to make sure we do an appropriate Shinoi B'Shasta Sinis Amayim, as well as an appropriate Shinoi B'Shasta Gibel. What constitutes an appropriate Shinoi? So this also gets a little bit tricky. So B'Shasta Sinis Amayim, the Gemara describes as the appropriate Shinoi being switching the order of the Mayim, namely, if it's normal to put the powder in first, then you put the water in first on Shabbos. If it's the type of mixture that's normal to put the water in first, and you flip it around, then you do the powder first. So each mixture has to be determined what's considered to be the norm. What's the norm when it comes to baby cereals? Anyone know? What do you usually do? What do you usually put the powder in first? I assume it's probably put the powder in first. That's what it says in the box. So you put the powder in first, so then you have to flip it around for the water. Now, some contemporary posts give weren't so sure, because apparently not everybody bothers reading the box. So some people just do whatever they want during the week. So if you do whatever you want during the week, then you don't really have an appropriate shinoi, that becomes a problem. So if you assume that you're creating an appropriate shinoi b'shasa sesamayim, that would suffice as shinoi number one. Then you have to have a shinoi b'shasa gibel. So what counts as a shinoi b'shasa gibel? So the Gemara talks about a few different possibilities. So the Gemara talks about what's called shesi v'erev. So shesi v'erev means you do, instead of mixing like that, you know, in a real solid mixture, you do a crisscross motion. You do a little this, then you do that, you do this, you do that. Chaznish is machmir that you do this, then you have to take it out of the thing, and then go out, take it out again. The kid's going to be bas mitzvah before you finish the cereal. So there are different opinions what exactly that shesi b'erev is. Then the Gemara talks about maybe instead of mixing it like with a spoon hard, maybe you can do is you shake it. You take the whole thing and just shake it up. Well, it's not going to work. So then the folks can talk about using your finger instead of using a clay. Make sure your finger is clean, or make sure you put a glove on or something, make sure that you do it in a sanitary manner. So again, these are all different eitzes as to what possible shinuyim for the Shas HaGibel proper. So again, our practice is that if and when we're going to be mounted with these kinds of things, we're only going to be mounted with a double shinuyim. The problem is that there are many, many posts who maintain that even all of the above, all these shinuyim don't necessarily work. Because the Gemara in the end of the Sefer Shabbos differentiates between what's called the Blila Oven and Blila Raka. The Gemara says that Lisha Diarais is only violated when you have a thick, like doughy kind of a substance. If you just have a more of a battery kind of a mixture, so that's only going to be an Issa Dirabbanan of Lisha. So there are many posts who maintain that all of these coolers only apply when you're dealing with the Blula Raka. When you're dealing with the Blula Office, then all bets are off. Everything is also. And others disagree. So if you want to be Machu in the Shaila, so that becomes even trickier. So now, not only do you have to concentrate to try to make sure you have a double Shinoi, you have to make sure that your consistency of baby seal isn't that thick. You have to water it down. You have to, maybe during the week you make little ovos, you have to make it much watery during on Shabbos. So you have a lot of things to pay attention to. So you got to figure out what shinui you're doing, make sure you're doing two shinuyim, and make sure that it's a blue l'racha, but at that point it's not even worth it to make the baby cereal. So this becomes hard. So the Shmir Shabbos is makel. Those who are stuck, if you're really stuck and you're really, really, the baby needs the cereal, you have to make the blue l'ava, so then one can be makel as long as one provides that one does the two shinuyim. So again, it's not the optimal thing to make baby cereal on Shabbos. One who can find other things for the kids to eat would be great. But those who are really stuck, so if they can make a blue l'racha-ish, that's even better. If they're really, really stuck, the baby has to eat the blue l'ava, so then you have to try as best as you can to replicate these two kinds of shinuyim. The other important foods that babies eat, one of the most important things is milk. So the baby has to have milk. So when a woman is nursing, so that's the easiest thing. So when a woman's nursing, so that's perfectly okay. There's a lot of lumdish discussion as to why is nursing permissible on Shabbos? Why isn't it a malacha of disha? The Gemara says that when you milk a cow on Shabbos, that's a malacha deraisa, according to most of the Rishonim. And according to many opinions, that's malacha deraisa of disha. It's like threshing. Same way when you thresh your grain, it's exerting pressure on the grain, so that gets out the inner part and the outer part. So then the same is true when you squeeze out a fruit, that's considered to be a malach of disha, or you squeeze the udder of a cow, that's considered to be the malach of disha. So the later post can discuss why isn't that when a baby is nursing, why isn't that called malach of disha? So whatever the answer to that question is, there's some answer to that question. So the mitzvah is mutter nursing child. That's not a shiloh. What the lumdish answer is a lot of pilpul, but at the end of the day, it's for sure mutter. But what sometimes becomes complicated is that sometimes the baby's not able to nurse for a variety of reasons. Sometimes the mother is not well, sometimes the baby's not well, sometimes the baby's in the hospital, the mother's not well. You have all kind of series of different complications that the baby's not able to nurse. And now the question becomes, now you have a much more serious problem, because now you have something which is almost analogous to milking cows. The same way that you milk your cow, that's an issur d'oraisa, so in a sense, extract the milk from the mother, that would be a very, very serious problem. So why don't you just leave it alone, don't do anything. So there's a twofold problem. Number one, it's going to be a big tzar for the mother. If the mother doesn't extract the milk, it's going to become very, very painful. And number two, you may need the milk for the baby. So how are you going to deal with that problem? So here, the Rishonim already deal with this problem. The Rishonim say that if the mother is in a lot of discomfort, which she inevitably will be if she's not able to nurse properly, so then it's only, we have to do it in a way that's only in Issa Dirabbanan. If you can figure out a way to extract the milk in a way that's only Dirabbanan, so then we're going to be mat in the Issa Dirabbanan with Macham Tzar. We're not mat to all the Issa Dirabbanan necessarily Macham Tzar, sometimes yes, sometimes no, but this is an example of something that we would be mat here with Macham Tzar. How do we make it into a Dirabbanan if it's a Shalat from Lachat Dirabbanan? So this is the phrase that we use called Cholav Ibud, that you have to discard the milk. If you discard the milk, so then it's not going to be a Dirabbanan. So why is that? So for a variety of reasons. First of all, it falls under the category of malach shetzicha legufa. It's like the Mishnah describes, if I carry a dead body out into the street, that's not a malach deraisa, we paskin, because it's only malach deraisa when I want to use the item that I'm using. Here I'm trying to discard it. So here I'm trying to discard the milk. That would not be a malach shetzicha legufa, that would be a derabanan. And even according to the Rambam, who happens to hold that malach shetzicha legufa is an issa deraisa, follows the other Tana, but the Rishonim point out that this may be even better. This may be such a fundamental change in the Tzivus HaMalacha that whenever it's being done, the Ibud may not constitute an act of Disha altogether. So for a variety of reasons, we pass in Shulchan Aruch that the mother is very uncomfortable and the baby's not around possibly to nurse, then the mother would be permitted to extract the milk, but the milk would have to go to Ibud. Then there's a further machlokes in the poskim, what constitutes the Ibud? So the Chazon Ish was machmir, that the Ibud means that the milk can never collect in any usable form. Let's say the mother uses a pump or something, a manual pump, and the milk collects into the receptacle of the pump, and then she takes it a minute later and throws it down the drain. So the Chazanish says that would be a very serious shaila. That's not called the ibud, because of the milk collected in the pump, even though she's not going to use the milk, so that's not considered to be the ibud. The ibud, says the Chazanish, is only if it goes directly from a body, mamish, into down the drain. How are you going to do that practically? So the Chazanish would say that you have to put some kind of some soap or something, put some kind of something that would disqualify the milk right away into the bottom of the pump, and then when she pumps and the milk gets mixed into the soap or something, then the milk becomes mamish mios, the baby would never drink such milk. So that's considered to be chalav l'ibud. So there are those who are machmek this Chazanish, that whenever a woman has to be chalav l'ibud on Shabbos, you have to be careful that the milk goes directly in the ibud. There are others who are a little bit more maker, there are others who argue that the ibud can also be accomplished if mice is the real ibud. Right now it's collected for 2 seconds, big deal, but self-dover, she's going to take it a minute later and throw it down the drain, so that's also considered to be cholav l'ibud. So again, there are different opinions about that. But to collect the milk, to use the milk, that's a very, very serious problem. So would we ever be mounted that? To mamash use the milk, to collect the milk, to use the milk? So it depends how much the baby needs the milk. So if the baby is doing fine with formula, doesn't need the milk, or the mother has stored milk, she has frozen milk from, she's been pumping milk for the last couple of weeks during the week, so then if the baby's doing fine, so then we would have, there would be no head there to collect the milk. There'd be a mamash shav deraisa. If we run into a potential issue of pigoch nefesh, there's some real fear that the baby's not going to take formula at all, and the baby mamish is not getting anything. The mother's, for whatever reason, there are infections, there are problems, there are issues why the mother can't nurse. So if the baby's hungry, it's not getting any milk, and it's not taking formula, so what are you going to do? So then there's pigoch nefesh, and you would have to collect the milk and have to be fed to the baby. If you have a non-Jew around who could do that for you, who can do the actual pumping for you, who could turn on the thing on the pump, that would be even better. There are different kinds of pumps. There are manual pumps, there are electric pumps. So the manual pumps obviously have less of a problem in terms of the electricity issue, but they're not as effective. So the electric pumps, if you have these kinds of situations, if you're able to put them on timers, that would be great. If you have a cord to turn them on, that's wonderful. If all else fails, so then you would probably be permitted to do certain kinds of things, called achayad, to prevent certain kinds of tzarim, or mechayla, things of that nature. Again, those become a little bit more complicated. But in terms of from the vantage point of the baby proper, so then if the baby absolutely needs it as a chashash pidoch nefesh, then you can just do what it has to be done. If not, so one should try to feed the baby other kinds of things. When we're dealing with milk, so if we're dealing with either sometimes a baby being fed by a bottle, sometimes the bottle is the mother's natural milk that's been stored for a while, or sometimes it's just a formula. So sometimes you want to heat up the bottle a little bit, so that runs into a potential shadow to bishul. So it's usually not such a serious problem because you're not going to make the bottle too hot. The last thing you want to do is fold the baby. You're not going to make it to yes, let us know. So that's not going to be such a big problem. So if you just make the bottle just a little bit warmish, so that would be okay. If for whatever reason you want to put it in the mamish hot water, so that becomes a very lumpish shiloh, depending on what you think about Iroi and Kremisha and Klisheni, Ravasha Makula, Ravasha Deklipo, is the bottle called the Klipa. That really goes way beyond the scope right now. But again, it's not all that relevant most of the time. All you need is just to take a little bit of the chill out of the bottle. That would be okay. If you're dealing not with natural milk, not with mother's milk, so you're dealing with milk that was already in its bashal beforehand, so then it was already pasteurized at one point along the way, so then the bishul issues are significantly less serious, because you always have ein bishul lach bishul as a backup, even though it's a double lach. Yeah, but it's a double lach, and it's not on the gamre, but it's zero for klisheni. So the Mishnah Berurah is making a lechachilah on that. So again, those are already technical details in Hilchos Bishul, not the most common.
We're saying making the milk yatzalat or using water that is yatzalat to heat up the bottle.
Yeah, but it's not going to get. Again, if the water is less than yatzalat bowl, then the milk's never going to get to be yatzalat bowl. But even if the water is yatzalat bowl, it's quite likely that the milk's not going to get that hot.
So it's not a problem as long as the milk doesn't get that hot.
If it's clearly never going to get that hot, if you leave it in long enough, maybe it will get hot. But I say, don't use such boiling. Just want to take out the chill and look a little bit. Okay, so we talked a little bit about the feeding babies. Let's move on to other aspects of babies. So a lot of discussion revolves around the issue of changing diapers on Shabbos and Yom Tov. So there are a whole series of different potential malachas involved in the process of changing babies and Shabbos. Let's see how we can sort out some of the issues. So one of the famous issues that's discussed is the issues of Korea and Topher, the issues of ripping and sewing. Where's the ripping, where's the sewing? So the Rambam writes in Hilchos Shabbos that medabik niyaros is chai b'shul Topher. If you take two pieces of paper and you stick together with glue, the substance, so that's considered to be a malacha of Topher, even though there's no sewing per se, but just the fact that medabik two things together, that's a problem. And then the opposite is also true. A mafir bin aniyaros, so a person breaks up between two stuck together papers, that would be a potential malacha of kereya. So now we run into a big problem. The person wants to open up the diaper, so there are different diapers. So some of the diapers still have the tabs to them, still have the sticky tabs to them. Many of the diaper companies don't have them anymore, so many of the diapers now use Velcro, so that's a significantly less of a problem. But if I'm not mistaken, last I checked, Pampers, anyone know? Anyone was holding in diapers?
Velcro. Okay.
Pampers is also switch?
Yes,
you sure? Pampers is a switch? Has Huggy switch?
I don't know how
they're Huggies. I don't remember. One of them, I think maybe Huggies hasn't switched. I don't know. Last I checked, one of the big brands was still using the adhesive strip. So we're going to talk about it anyway, but maybe it's halacha l'maisa, but it's important because everything we're talking about applies to band-aids, and kids tend to get kid band-aids also. So we'll talk about the same topic. But we'll talk about it as if it's real l'maisa in terms of the diapers. So there are potentially how many different problems? Potentially four different malachas. There are going to be four times of malacha. Why? If you open up the diapers, that's a potential, you open up the adhesive strip, that's a potential malacha of kereya. Then when you put the diaper on, you close it, so that's a malacha of kereya. And the baby gets dirty and you open it up, that's another malacha of kereya. And then when you want to throw it into the garbage, so people tend to, you know, stick it back together again and then toss it into the garbage, that's a potential malacha of kereya. So you have four potential malachas. It's only two chatosis because two are the same halacha. So you only have misa four times, only have two chatosis. So what's the story? So how do we get around some of these problems? So one great solution was given is that maybe this falls into the category of called kriya she'eino shel kayama and tefira she'eino shel kayama. So that's a big machlokes in Rishonim. Is there even such a category or not? So some of the Rishonim say they never heard of such a thing. There's no gemara that says it. There's any limitation of shel kayama. And other Rishonim say, no, it does exist, it's derived from Kosha, the same as the Kosha we have in Rishon Chayama, you have it by Kriya as well. So that's a big machlek Yisrael Rishonim. The Rama writes that the Ikra din probably is that there's no Kriya, no Tzfira, it's in Rishon Chayama, it's not permanent. But the Rama writes that we shouldn't tell this to the Amaratim, so I guess that means everyone in the Shir is not Amaratz. So everyone's listening on Yom Torah, I guess everyone's listening on Yom Torah, it's not an Amaratz, everyone's listening. We're hereby announcing that the Rama says that we shouldn't tell it to the Amaratim, because people are going to be mezalzel on the Shabbos. So some of them made the poskim right that the Rama was only concerned about real tefillah. If you tell people to take in needles and threads and start sewing things, that's going to be a big zilzel Shabbos. The Rama in his wildest dreams wouldn't have thought that opening and closing diaper tabs or something would be any zilzel Shabbos. He didn't think that that's such a tremendous zilzel Shabbos. That's what we usually assume, that if it's mutter out Yenosh HaKayama, then we can tell even the Amaratzim. They can, Amaratzim can also change the diapers on Shabbos. But why exactly is this Enosh HaKoyama? So we have to be very, very careful to figure this out. Is it really true? Even assuming this criteria exists, is it really true? So we said there are four different stages. So when you first open up that diaper, let's say in the case of the Band-Aid, you first open up the Band-Aid, why is it Enosh HaKoyama? The diaper's been stuck together for the last 10 years in the factory. When Mr. Huggies or Pampers made this diaper, so it was a long time ago. So it's, what do you mean it's Enosh HaKoyama? I'm doing a kriya on something which is Shel Kayama. So some achrenim and make, that's called Enosh HaKayama. Why is that? Because since it was made to be opened at moment's notice, but the Pampers were originally made, they were made al das, that the first time a person buys them, the first baby gets dirty, you can open it. So it wasn't set to be in place for X amount of time. That's also called Enosh HaKayama. So again, that's a kula within the Agdar of Enosh HaKayama. But again, a lot of achrenim write that way. So that's the case. That we could read a half a side, I believe. So then, when you put the diaper on the baby and you stick the tabs together, so that's a potential malach of teifer. That is for sure in Rishon Chayama. That is not, it's not going to last for very long. So that's for sure in Rishon Chayama, again, according to the Mikvah. Then when the baby gets dirty an hour later, say, open it up, you're doing a kriya on something that was in Rishon Chayama, that's also okay. Now when you do the last one, when you stick together the tabs and you throw into the garbage, that's a very, very tricky one, because that's like the Band-Aid also. So you take a Band-Aid off and you stick it to each other. Is that called Kayama and Enosh HaKayama? It's a very dachistical line, because on the one hand, it's going to last for a long, long time. Until this diaper decomposes, this diaper is going to be stuck together for the next 20 years. On the other hand, one could argue that I only want it to be stuck together for the next 20 seconds until it ends up in the garbage. Once it's in the garbage, I couldn't care less whether it opens up or not. So that's a very, very fine line. When I do Malach and Shabbos, I'm literally doing it Shel Kayama, but my intention is only significant for the Enosh HaKayama part. So how do you mark to that? Very, very strange, Shaila. So there is a Maral Diskin who brings one of the, believe it or not, rayas from the soil of Azazel. That it says in the Mishnah Numa that they used to tie the string, the red string around the head, around the horns of the soil of Azazel. And then they would throw it off the cliff and watch to see that it turned white. So the Maral Diskin asked the Kasha, what right did they have to tie it? It's not part of the Avodah, it's an Akka of the Avodah. So Shuluch Hasor is the Chesha, but what right do you have to be kosher the red string? That's not so critical. So isn't that a kshira shel kayama? You're tying it's going to last that way forever and ever and ever. So Rav Diskin said, no, it's going to last that way forever and ever and ever, but I only care about it for the next 10 minutes. I only care about it until I see it go down the cliff. Once it goes down the cliff, so then it turned white. Once it turned white, so then I couldn't care less what happened to it. So that's not considered to be shel kayama. And others would be the right. Others says, how do you know? Maybe when the Mishnah says that's nasa evarim evarim, that it gets broken up into a million pieces, the saw on the way down the cliff. So maybe the string falls off also, and the string gets ripped up, and it's not Enosh HaKayama. You have to run a test case. You got to go off to the Elz Gezer, go off the mountain, and throw a sara with a red thing on its head off the cliff, and have it. No, don't be makdish it, but it would be shal of a mala and a shchut echutz or something. Mar says that's cool. I guess this is mutter. Is you want to cut shchut echutz? That's mutter because it's pachutz. Okay. So you have to be careful to run this kind of a test and see whether it falls apart or not. It's, I don't know. It's very strange. Strange shal. I guess you wanted to make sure that it would last. I don't know at what point this starts to turn white. I've never saw this. I was always staying watching the Kriya Shema Torah, the Kriya Shema, so I never saw it with this. Yeah.
Don't we care that it's Keshet Kayama all the while that it's in the trash also?
That's the shadow. The shadow, I don't care about that. So the question is that called Shel Kayama? Does Kayama?
We care for a long time. Probably even.
Oh, you mean I care? Cold bath in the trash? What do I care about in the trash?
If it opens up and it smells.
It depends where I live. I live in an apartment building. I do it down the chute. What do I care whether it opens
no,
up?
No, right.
Enough for me to where I live in a house. I live in my own house. I don't want my garbage cans to get so dirty. Okay. I don't know. You can argue one with it. Lafini is the idea like this. So, again, this is all working with this assumption that there's a het to banish a chayama. If you don't believe in this het, they're all together by Topher and Karet, the whole thing is off. So, there are some who have suggested, let's open up all the diapers from beforehand. The problem is you open the diapers and it loses the stickiness. So some wanted to say, let's at least open the diapers and then close them. Why? Because that first opening was the shakiest of all of them, because some poskim said, that's called a kayama. It's been stuck together for 10 years. Now you're opening it. So that's called a kriya of a tvisha kayama. So there are some who used to be machma for that let's at least open the diapers for a second and then we close them all together. So when my oldest was born, so we used to do that. I used to open up all the diapers. That's what I need. I don't know. 10, 15, 9, whatever it was, I would open the diapers and close them right before Shabbos. That way, at least we didn't have to rely on the first, the kula got the kula. So we did that for a while until, I remember when we stopped. We stopped when my second one was born, and my first one was still in diapers, and it was a 3-day yontif. It was Rosh Hashanah, you know, Sukkah, Sukkah, Shemitah. So it was three yom. So I was opening up 3 days worth of diapers, 3 weeks in a row, for two kids. So it was like 90 diapers done. Well, the best of class was because the tshuva never shun, I was opening up 95 diapers. So at that point, we did away with that, the chumrah, and then the psach became in the Sobolovsky home, that became Arayim Azeh, that diapers are opened in the Sobolovsky home. I didn't say who opens them. I said some people open them, some people don't open them. But those who are in charge of diapering babies on Shabbos are have a right to be makeup. Now Baruch Hashem Ach Shadara, now we have Velcro, so that's a whole different movement. New generation.
Can you themselves?
I mean, according to that tzvar, that would be according to the Maharal Diskin, right? Depends how much you want to be making on the cell. That's also cooler, right? I don't know. Okay. All right, anyway, so that's only one part of the saga of the change of diapers on Shabbos. I think lechatchila, if you're ready in Karazpa, you're ready changing, it's probably better not to stick that last one together. Probably just roll it up or something, throw it in a bag and call it a day. But there are a lot of other issues that come up in terms of changing diapers on Shabbos. That's the issue of cleaning the baby altogether. So Kayadua, there's a big tumult in the contemporary poskim about the use of wipes on Shabbos and Yom Tov. The Fini is the idea. It's a Metzia Shaila. It all boils down to whether you believe that there's stuff that's really absorbed into the wipes or not. So if there's stuff there, if you know whatever stuff is in there, is absorbed into the wipe itself, so then I think it's a big problem. Then it's a really schit that's not like squeezing out a cloth, that would be a problem. If you believe that basically it's just on the external part, so then it's nothing. You know, that's like pouring out a bottle, so then that would be okay. So the HVH, there are different opinions about this. Again, it's hard for me to answer this. There are gedolei rabbanim who are matter it. I don't know, I'm not knowledgeable enough about the mitzias of wives to know the answer to that question. Different people tell you different things, maybe not all wives are the same, I don't know. So I've left this into the domain of those who want to be makel to do it, have a right to do so. Those who don't want to rely on this, so then they find other ways to the baby. There is a spritz that's made, there's a spray that's made. It was made by somebody in New Square. So it's basically all the same stuff that's inside a wipe, just in a spray bottle. So I remember when one of my kids was born, I was so excited that I found it in one of the fruity stores, so I bought a whole bunch of them. I don't know, my wife wasn't as excited about it as I was, so I think I still have some minimum ones. I still sit in the house somewhere. But then there's always the old-fashioned way of, you know. water and pans and, you know, just kind of doing it as best as you can. But again, those who want to be mekel to his wives definitely have gedolei apostu to the law. Other things that come up in terms of diapering babies is very often the baby has a rash. So what do you do about a diaper rash? So even if the baby does have a rash, people like to put on all kind of ointments, all this kind of cream. What's it called? What's the cream called?
A and D,
right? Right. When I was young, I used to always mix them up. A and B is like a gefilte fish brand, and A and D is and my wife would always send me to the store to tell me to get A and D, and I would bring up gefilte fish, right? So, okay. If you make enough of those mistakes, you don't get called to go shopping anymore. So, there's always a shadow. Whenever you have any creams and every of these ointments smearing on, there's always a potential malach of mimareach. So, the way to avoid these kinds of things are as follows. Whenever you have any situations of a chola, we treat children basically as being cholim, even if they're not necessarily sick per se, but little babies need to consider it a chola. So one is permitted to do as follows. Rather than actually rubbing in the cream, one can just kind of plop the cream on. So you take a diaper and throw some cream and throw it onto the baby, throw it onto the diaper or something. You don't mommy just rub it in like you did during the week. So mikra, then that's mutter. The question, why exactly is that mutter? How exactly does that become mutter? So there are some folks can claim that the reason why that's mutter is that it's based on the idea that tzorchei chola sometimes ought to be done kliyachei yad. There are others who claim that it's not really based on kliyachei yad, it's based on the fact maybe that's not even true some halacha, maybe that's not even called merech altogether. It's a nuance of a difference. Mechab enough communa for older people, if you don't really have a heter chola, would it still be mutter? Again, it's a very nuanced issue. But the bottom line, when it comes to babies, it's mikra and it's mutter. So either the baby has a diaper rash, or you're trying to avoid a diaper rash, you want to put on one of these creams, so instead of rubbing it in, you just kind of plop it. Okay, good. So let's move on in terms of other things relating to that.
Same problem if you use a tube or like a top of it,
you're
squeezing out of the tube.
So yeah, that's not called schita. There's no schita, just squeezing out of the tube. It's not absorbed into the tube.
Yeah, usually it changes the surah
of the tube. Okay, so now we have a very, very happy baby. The baby ate, the baby's clean and everything. So now usually what the baby likes to do is likes to play. So there are a whole bunch of different childs involved in babies playing and kids playing, etc. So we should just preface by saying that many things that we permit for children, talking about even a little bit older children, to do on Shabbos are things that are not per se in the spirit of Shabbos, but they're not actual malachas per se. Whatever's not really malacha, not really mitzvah, not real is involved, so then we let children under the age of Barbas mitzvah do. Things that are mamash asur, then we're not supposed to have a children doing malachas either. But things that are really mikra din mutter, just that they're not in the spirit of Shabbos, then for young children under bar mitzvah age we permit it, but for adults we would not permit. So all kind of this is for Shabbos, right? This is an introduction to the siman about playing games, all kind of board games, all this kind of stuff. This is not Shabbos stuff. Adults should not be playing Monopoly on Shabbos, should not be playing, I don't know, another game, Risk on Shabbos. I don't know, these are not things for adults. When you're a kid, you're under the age of bar mitzvah, so you play these things. But for grown-ups should be doing more Shabbos oriented activities. In the greatest scheme of things, if they're not going to be doing these kinds of board games, they'll be doing more inappropriate things at Shabbos, okay? So play braver, then maybe it's better to have them do these kinds of things rather than doing other things. But all kind of playing of these kinds of things are clearly only in the realm for children. And obviously in this category, it's playing ball at Shabbos, it's playing ball in Yom Tov, those without question, it's irrelevant. There's a lumbish discussion about the Rishonim, about the balls, is the ball muktzah, the ball not muktzah, and the Tam, the ball in Yom Tov, and the Tayyip, and all. It's not a relevant discussion for us. Playing ball in America has a very, very obvious connotation. It's a weekly kind of an activity. Maybe in some places it's a Shabbos activity, but it's a weekly activity. It's something that clearly has absolutely no place in any home that's Shomer Shabbos and Yom Tov in a proper manner. So above the age of Bar Mitzvah, it's absolutely Ruffinius dieting. It's absolutely not negotiable. It's a non-starter kind of activity. But for under the age of Bar Bas Mitzvah, okay. So then,
under the age of what?
Bar Bas Mitzvah.
Oh.
So the kids want to play a ball, so then one has to just be careful that it doesn't become out of control either. So again, even for little kids, I would not advocate having formal leagues and having, kids play much formal baseball games and everything. Kids are thrown around football in the backyard or something, for under the age of Bar Mitzvah, I can't stop that. But over the age of Bar Mitzvah, I think it's clearly not in the spirit of Shabbos. When we say something's not in the spirit of Shabbos, it doesn't mean it's just not a nice thing to do. It means that it's a problem. It means Shabbos is supposed to be Shabbos Lashem. The Ramban describes in Chumash that you can have activities that are not technically also that are flagrant violation of Shabbos Lashem, she's considered to be mamash attending out for chilul Shabbos. No, she's mechalak the Shabbos, being involved in activities when they're clearly not in the proper spirit of Shabbos. For little kids, these kinds of things would be permissible. But you have to just be sure that there's no actual malachas that are taking place. So one of the famous.
If a kid asks you to have a catch with him,
I don't think it's the appropriate thing to do. I think you should explain to him that we get older, we don't play ball on Shabbos. If you want to know if the kid's going to be so unbelievable, it's going to be impossible, if he's going to go crazy, you want to have an indoor kind of a catch, maybe. I don't know. That's the case by case kind of a thing. So some of the favorite things that kids like to play with, Lego. So Lego was always a whole tumult about, is Lego really considered to be bonus, like not considered to be bonus. So generally the poskim said that if the Lego is done in such a way that the five-year-old does it, and then the three-year-old comes and knocks it over in 1 second, so that's clearly not any degree of kavod to it whatsoever. So probably Mikra did its mukta. So anything, and again, I'm not up to date with all the modern-day versions of Lego, but whatever is equivalent to that, that it's a very flimsy kind of a structure, so those kinds of things would technically be permissible. There is an interesting application to a very, very common shiloh that people have with kids, in terms of Bona, making kinds of tents, these kind of pub houses, all kind of kids like that, they put big pillows on the floor and then they throw blankets over the top, they make all these tent kind of structures. So very often I get the shot that a problem with shops in Yantar. So the Gemara talks about that. The Gemara basically says that when you're building something and it's this very flimsy kind of a structure and it's not being made for the purpose of really protection, so then the Gemara says if you do it in an abnormal fashion, then it's mukta. What's called an abnormal fashion? You have to make the roof before you make the sides. So the Gemara at the end of Masechta Beitza says you're allowed to pile up barrels one on top of another, but you have to do it in a backwards way. You have to first hold the top barrel and then put the lower barrels on, because otherwise it gives the impression of a little bit of a derech binyan. So when kids play with these kinds of things, you should have delegate one kid to hold the pillow on top, and somebody else should bring the cushions on the side, and shut, and then it would be okay. So it's interesting. A lot of kids at Bergenfeld already know that, and when you play with build these kinds of things, you have to build it upside down. Okay, good. One of the famous things that we like to do with little babies to keep them quiet are the baby swings. So it's a great invention. You take a kid and swing, turn it on, and the kid swings all day. So the question is, can you do that on Shabbos and Yom Tov? So there are two kinds of swings. So one kind of swing is the wind-up swing, and one kind of swing is the battery-operated swing. So the battery-operated swing, obviously you can't press the button on the Shabbos, and that goes without saying. What about the wind-up swing? So this was a big machlokes of poskim. So there are some who wanted to compare the wind-up swings, and for this matter, this would apply to all wind-up toys as well, that some wanted to compare this to the chayyotim about winding up watches in the old days. So you had to wind up your watch. Most people don't even know that anymore. In the old days, you had to wind your watch. When I was a little kid, I mean, you had to wind your watch every day to get it to go. So the chayyotim writes that if your watch stopped and you want to wind it up now, that's a malach deraisa. It's called nachma patish. Right now, the watch is not working, and now you're winding it. That's called nachma patish.
You got the watches then.
Okay, those are big shilohs, those watches. There's a big machlokes about those watches. You got watches that just get wound up while you're walking around with them. Not so simple. So there was a machlokes within that chayodim. We followed this chayodim. There's a further machlokes about whether the watch hasn't stopped yet, whether the watch is still going. You want to wind it to prevent it from stopping. So some said that's also called makutapish, and others would make it. I remember when I was a little boy, my grandmother used to tell me that they used to tell us what's in Europe, and whenever she came from Europe, and whatever the Messiah they had, that's okay. As long as the watch is still going, you're allowed to continue winding. But if the watch ever stopped, then you're allowed to wind it on Shabbos. So some wanted to compare the winding up of the wind-up toys and the wind-up the swings, all this kind of stuff, to the winding up of the watches with the Shabbos, Machmatatish. So others disagreed. Others said it's not the same. In the case of the watch, when the watch is supposed to be running all the time, and when the watch stops, the guy gets upset. Oh yeah, my watch stopped. Oh yeah, now it's at the wrong time. We got to go wind it up again. We got to fix the time on it. So that's already a... That's almost like talking about the fixing something that's broken. But in the case of the toy, can you imagine, let's say, a case of a wind-up car or something. So when the car stops, the guy says, oh, that car is broken. I got to get it. It's supposed to stop. Well, let's say when the swing stops. Oh, the swing is broken. Gewalt, then it started again. No, it's when you're in it, it's working. When you're out of it, it's not working. That's the way it goes. So, of course, it stops after a little bit of time. Suppose you want it to stop after a little bit of time. So, you can't give, it doesn't give off that impression of being broken. So, then maybe one can argue that's like called Machlopapish to rewind it. So, that was a very dakas tikamach like a sepelskin. So, those who are machmer on the Shiloh would refrain from all the wind up toys and Shabbos, would refrain from all the wind up swings, those kind of stuff on Shabbos and Yom Tov. So I remember when my oldest was born, we used to live in the Heights. So it wasn't clear about what the din should be about these kinds of things. So I bought we got a battery swing. And I used to turn on the battery from before Shabbos and press the button. So it's there, and every Shabbos had switch batteries. So it would run itself out. So on Shabbos. So I did that one time. And then I realized, I think there was more of a problem, because there was a problem with Shmiya Kol, because those things make a lot of noise. So there's a sugi in the first bed of Shabbos that you're not allowed to put water into, you're not allowed to put grain into a water wheel. It's going to turn on Shabbos, it's going to make a racket. Because of Mashmiya Kol, because some Hashem says it's a Marasayan, some Hashem says it's a Zivus of the Shabbos, and so it's a little Shabbos, whatever it is. Anytime Malach happens by itself that causes a lot of attention to itself, that's considered to be a problem on Shabbos and Yom Tov. So it's actually Machlekes that we showed on whether we even follow that line in the Gemara. It's Machlekes the Gemara itself. And the Ramos Machmer, at least the Chachil, the Ramos Machmer in this, and we try to avoid any kind of a system that's set up before Shabbos that draws a lot of attention to itself. So I was thinking to myself that these kinds of systems, here I set it up before Shabbos, and Mamash makes a lot of noise, so it would be a problem, it would be Asr al Tzmashmiya Kol. So even if it's not a problem of Machmav Hakdash, it's still be the Mashmiya Kol, lo Yatsa. So you stop using them altogether. So we did it the old fashioned way, hold the baby, swing yourself, go up, not anymore.
So alarm would be an issue?
Yeah, so that was a big shout about alarm clocks. So the Moshe asked the alarm clocks based on this. The Moshe said that if you set an alarm clock before Shabbos, so that's a problem, because it's Mashmiya Kol. So others disagreed with the Moshe, not everyone agreed with this. The Moshe asked it, and the Moshe said, but he thinks that Mashmiya Kol has a shear. It's only called Mashmiya Kol, you can hear it outside of the room. If it's so low, you can't hear in the next room. He didn't think it was Mashmiya Kol. The problem is, if it's so low, you can hear in the next room, it's probably not going to wake up anyway. So I've told over the story many times that when we first got married, so I used to be vehicle, I thought that the alarm that I was using was so low, the coach, you could hear it. And then one time I had left the house early, And it was in the summertime, it was in the Heights, on the fifth floor, and the window was open, and my wife was still sleeping, and then I'd come back, and I had set the alarm to wake her up, and I was downstairs on the ground, five floors below, and the window was open, I could hear the alarm five floors down. So I realized to myself, oh, it's a Mashmiya Kol. So that was it, that was the end of the alarm clock. So the good news is that once you start having kids, then you don't need alarm clocks anymore. They're better than all the alarm clocks. Wake you up 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, because they were up to getting up to the showers. Okay, good. There are some other things that come up and do.
So they have a wind up car differently, because like the car still works without winding it up. You're just bring it back in and you let go and just go.
I mean, if you want to play with it without winding it,
you wind it up, it's not much of a package because you're not, it's able to go, it
goes a little bit. Goes a little
you
bit
go backwards, it goes by itself.
I'm not holding in the reverse and the forward. I don't have any gears of the wind-up car. You have to show it to me. Show it to me tomorrow. Okay, bring it to the rotation. Okay. Another issue that comes up in terms of entertaining your children is taking kids out for a walk. It's the problem. The thing is, taking kids out for a walk. The only problem is that if there's no Eruv, then you're a big, big problem. So if you live in a place in Eruv, that's great. If you live in a place without an Eruv, then it's a big problem. Most of us grew up in communities which had Eruv. Myself and I, the Erevin River, though, where I grew up, was not built until I was about 10 or 11 years old. So I do remember a world pre-Erevin, but most of you guys probably come from any larger Jewish community and never really grew up without an Erev. So it's an amazing thing. I always find that once in a while the Erev goes down, people have not a clue about what you're not allowed to do. I remember once somebody called me when the Erev was down in Tina a few years ago. They wanted to know, are they allowed to wear the baby instead of carrying the baby? They wear the baby on. I don't know what that meant exactly. As a suit, I don't remember what she was trying to do with the baby. But I said, you can't wear your baby because I'm clothing the baby. So you're not allowed to carry a baby on Shabbos. Even if the baby's able to walk by itself, if the baby's not able to walk, that's a much more serious problem. If the baby is able to walk, it's chaynos, it's asful. That only solves the problem in the Torah, does not solve the problem in the Rabbanim. So one is not allowed to push a baby carriage, one is not allowed to carry a baby, nothing, if there's no Erev. If there's no Erev and one wants to be makel to have a goy push a baby carriage, so that becomes a very, very tricky question. It depends on community to community. In some places, that's considered to be a big zilzul Shabbos. In some places, a less zilzul Shabbos. Again, it's hard for me to answer. For the rub of that particular community, would have to be consulted as to what to do about that. But the actual carrying or pushing the baby carriage stuff is clearly off limits. On Yom Tov, one is allowed to. The Mishnah says the very should allow to take your baby out on Yom Tov. Menach Hananel says that it means the baby needs a bris. You need to take it to the bris. But most of the Rishonim say it means just time taking for a shvatzir, so that's okay. You're allowed to push a baby carriage on Yom Tov. That's considered to be mitoch. So that's looked at the carriage of nefesh. That constitutes a tzarech hayom. those who are taking a walk with the Navy on Yom Tif, after going out of the Eruv, may have to be careful about certain things, namely whether there are things in the carriage that are not with Tzarech Hayom. So if it's some diapers, that's okay. You're not mechuyav to measure out exactly how many diapers you want to have. That's why Moshe writes, it's called Biru B'Shiurim. If all the diapers are, if they're all in the same bag, all the same package, so I know I need a few diapers for the next, take a nice hour walk, so I may need one or two diapers. So you don't have to start counting out how many diapers you have. It's all in the same bag, that's called Biru B'Shiurim. Or let's say he has a blanket, so the baby may get cold, you put a blanket on, that's okay. Well, there's a toy, the baby might play with a toy, or there's a bottle, those things are all okay. Sometimes people have in their baby carriages, garbage, all kind of stuff that they're not going to use b'chlal and just walk. So that's a big machlokes in the poskim. Is that called biru b'shiurim also? Because on the one hand, I'm doing the same ma'aseh hotzah, so maybe everything is covered by that. Or maybe, no, maybe that doesn't meet the criteria of biru b'shiurim. That's a complicated shayla.
If you're carrying diapers and you're on the way back, the house, and you
know,
10 minutes you get back, you're not
going to
need diapers anymore.
So you
stop.
No, I don't think so. That's it to yourself. It means if I would have told you that you're going to have to leave all your diapers in the park, so then you probably wouldn't have wanted to take the diapers in the first place, which means you would probably would have taken the baby to walk in the first place. So, like the same way when you bring a box to the shul, you're afraid you're allowed to bring the box to that. That's called it to yourself.
Similar, but like, you know, things that you need to start hailing, but what if you have like a giant bottle or something? Yeah, I'm going to use everything in the bottle.
No, but it's all the same. It's the same as cooking. Like, you're allowed to cook up a whole pot of soup, you only want to eat a bowl. So you say, Rivas Shirin on those songs. I remember when we lived in the Heights, there was no area of Bechlal. Not this side of the Heights, not the other side of the Heights, not this street. There's not much nothing. And then later in the years, the coupe that we were here, when the first area was built, it was very, very small. It was just Mamish on one side of the street, and across the Amsterdam Avenue, with Mamish and nothing. So it was, so in Shabbos, you really, basically the women were we couldn't go anywhere. So Yom Tov was always a Shavuot. Pesach Sukkot was always stayed in Yeshiva. Rosh Hashanah wasn't a big time tish, but here, but Shavuos, everyone stayed in Yeshiva Shavuos. So that was like the big, that was the big time. Everyone went out with the baby carriages. We walked to the other side of the Heights. It was like a whole tot around. So, so I remember I was going through the stroller, taking things out of the stroller, what's in the stroller, what's in the stroller, what is Rosh Hashanah? Not Rosh Hashanah, I remember. I remember I was so crazy for what was inside the stroller. All the things that are potentially Tzarech Hayom are permissible. Okay. Anyway, get back to this story. When you take your baby for a walk in the baby carriage, so sometimes you want to open and close the hood of the carriage. So that's a potential issue of a CSOL. Many possible makel, but the way our strollers are, that the whole thing is connected together. So that's not really considered to be a CSOL. That's considered to be what the Gemara calls a kisei trasko. Gemara says you're not opening clothes like a folding chair and shops and yontem. That's not called bayna. That's all the pieces are there. They're just stretching them out and opening and closing them. That's okay. So many folks are going to make the condition was makel, and that would apply to a hood of a baby carriage as well. But Moshe was not convinced that should be okay. There's a lot of the shayla machlokes what the parameters of kisei trasko are. But the chadish was making that you're allowed to open and close the baby carriage. Again, not everybody was. If you want to throw something else on top of the baby carriage, that's a whole other ballgame. That's like a netting or something on top of the carriage. So that could potentially be a problem. Once you try to spread it out more than a tefach before Shabbos or Yom Tov begins, so then it would be, that's called the most of an olah roi, and that would be permissible. Okay, so.
Would it be, according to Rav Moshe, in this particular case, if it's
Mechor
B'Tzirim, it shouldn't be a problem, right?
Yes, Ramosha held that the Kula of Kisei Traskel only applies when it's not being done Derech Lahagin, when it's being done to protect, so then that was never included in the Heter of Kisei Traskel.
We permit, if you have a hole on a Sukkah, if you have the third wall, that's a door that opens and closes, you're allowed to close that door, right? If you have a Sukkah that has three walls,
yeah.
The middle wall, you have a ches wall, and the horizontal wall opens and closes like a door. That's permitted, even though it's a mechitza amateras.
That's a different story. This is the mechitza amateras is one. So yeah, this is a much more serious problem because this is derech ohel. This is serving for the function of protection. You're doing this to protect the baby from the rain and from the sun. So that's more common.
Using
that
your rain cover on the stroller?
Right, if you want to throw them on, right, so it should be, I'll try to open up them before Shabbos a little bit. Should we spread over the tefach, over the top of the carriage before Shabbos? That would be okay. Okay, so hopefully this part won't happen to children, but sometimes children do get hurt. So what do we do? A child gets hurt on Shabbos, what do you do? So obviously, if we're getting a chash, there's nothing to discuss. he obviously has to do whatever you have to do. If there's, we said that little children are considered to be cholos she'ein by sakonis generally, and it's a question mostly just how little is little, but definitely babies, infants, toddlers are for sure considered to be cholos she'ein by sakonis. So one of the guidelines with dealing with children who are sick or hurt in terms of Shabbos and Yom Tov. So to do a deraisa for somebody who's not a chashash of sakonis pikuach nefesh would obviously be out of the question. To do a miru liyakam that was mutter, the must be fairish, and a miru liyakam was mutter lechetchila on a for a cholos she'ein by sakonis. So let's say if a little child and any needs a little child has, you can ask a goy to do that. Even if the goy do an outright deraisa would be okay. What about other kinds of derabbanim? So the Ramban writes that certain derabbanims yes, certain derabbanims no. What's an example of derabbanim that's yes? Something that's done kaliyachayad. If you do something in an abnormal fashion, so then that's a very low level kind of a derabbanim, and therefore it would be mutter for a cholos she'ein by sakonis. There is a machlokes what exactly the Ramban meant. So the Shulchan Aruch, when he quotes the Ramban, right, that the Ramban meant is that it's a double drabon. Namely, it's an issa drabon, and you're doing the issa drabon on kiliyachayad. So if you're doing an issa drabon on kiliyachayad on Shabbos, that's very, very low, and that's mutter for cholish and misukana. And then others point out, they lekal, and later folks can point out, so if you look at the original Ramban and the Teres Adam, Shulchan didn't have a Teres Adam, he's quoting from Rishonim or quoting from it, but in the Ramban itself, doesn't sound that way. It sounds like it's mutter even to do deraisas as long as it's done kiliyachayad. Because just the fact that you're doing kaliyachia, that will remind you not to do a deraisa, and that's mutlach achila for a cholish ein b'sakana. With the bananas of the chadish, would make it even not for cholish, make it even for adult also ones. So that's a shaila how we should pass it. That's a very, very pivotal question in halacha. So there are some poskim who machmir to say ein lano elavashkan shochanoch quotes the Ramban halacha, but he quotes his chumer the version of the Ramban. And Shlomo Zalman is quoted by Shmuel Shabbos as saying that if one's stuck, which is always stuck, there's always Shazad Chashailas, one can rely on the Eglital's version, which seems to be the more accurate, what the Ramban seems to say in the Tzrach Adam itself. So this has a lot of potential applications. Let's say you have all kind of different Tzrachim of a child. Sometimes a child needs his, nebulizers, all kind of stuff. So sometimes these things can be maybe even Chashash of Yotbuch Nevesh, but very often they're not Mamash Yotbuch Nevesh. The child has all kind of different conditions, different stuff, and there's no going around to help you with. So what can you do? So according to the Mekilim, as long as you have Tinkal Yachiyad, it's mutter. So as long as you can turn on machines, and you can do it with your elbows, and you can do it with your nose, and you all kind of kunsim, whatever, as long as you do everything, you push buttons, as long as you do everything Tinkal Yachiyad, so then you grid in, that would all be mutter, because the child is considered, the little baby is considered to be a Chalisha Ein B'Sakana. According to the Machmirim, you would have to first determine whether what you're doing is the right Derabban. Maybe what you're doing is the Derabban anyway. Maybe let's choose is the Derabban. That's a further Shaila. But you first have to paskin whether what you're doing is the right Derabban. And then only then can you begin to be Mekel if it would be Kaliyachiyah. But according to the Mekilim version of the Ramban, you wouldn't even have to make that Cheshbon. It would just be Mutter because of just outright, even a derais if it's done Kaliyachiyah, is Mutter for Tzarech HaBachayla. It's a very common Shaila that happens again. Hopefully it won't happen too often, but very, very often a child falls, gets hurt, need stitches, so we have to assess whether it's a chashash of pikuach nefesh. So it depends how bad a cut it is. So very often it is a potential chashash of pikuach nefesh, or one I think to get infected. So sometimes you have to do stitching. So the post can discuss. So let's say the come to a doctor. If it's a goyish doctor, so the goyish doctor will stitch up the baby. Fine. What if it's a Jewish doctor? So it's a Jewish doctor, and now the doctor says, okay, we have to do 20 stitches. What do you have to do 20 stitches for? So it could be that medically all you have to do is 8 stitches. Why are they doing the other 12 stitches? Because of cosmetic reasons. It's going to leave a bigger scar if you don't stitch it up properly. So is that a matir? Is that a heter to do extra stitches? To a Jew to do extra stitches, is that a problem? So Shlomo Zalman was making on that for a variety of reasons. A couple of lumdish reasons. One was based on the Magen Mishnah, who says you're allowed to do certain tzarchei chol even past people for nefesh chapter, not for now. And based on the sugya of Shabbos, you're allowed to be chazer and sitzin. She'enim achveres hamila, kolzman shlo pirish. It's considered to be one mice again. Also a very, very long, a very loaded raya. But at the end of the day, Shlomo Zalman was mekel. I'm not saying everyone was mekel. Shlomo Zalman was mekel. So those who want to rely on Shlomo Zalman at the expense of a child having a scar, I definitely have what to rely on. Shlomo Zalman could paskin that these kinds of things are mutter as long as the initial doing is for the purposes of some kind of far-fetched pikuach nefesh, as long as it's within the realm of chashash pikuach nefesh. So then the normal stitching can be done, whatever has to be done. one has to be careful when we're dealing with any kinds of potential pigul nefeshes for a child, like potential for an adult also, not to go overboard. Sometimes people do all kinds of crazy things. They think that, well, pigul nefesh, so we're allowed to drive, we're allowed to do it. So it depends. So if it's mamish, every second counts, and you have no choice, and you have to get into your own car and drive, okay? So I tell people it's very, very unlikely that you have to ever drive for pigul nefesh and shabbos. Just remember one of shach. If it's an absolute emergency, you should call an ambulance. If it's not an absolute emergency, but has to get done in the next hour, because there are different kinds of ruach nefeshes, there are heart attacks and there are stitches. So if the bleeding is stopped, no one's going to die in the next hour. You have to make sure to get stitched up appropriately before an infection gets set in. So those kinds of ruach nefeshes usually have some time for. So if you have time, so you get a goy to drive you, whether you get an Uber, whether you get a call a taxi service, you figure out in different ways to potentially get a goy to get you to the hospital. If all else fails and you have to get to the hospital and you can't get an ambulance and you can't get a gun, so then never, then you have to drive in Shabbos. But for a Jew to get into the car, to drive in Shabbos, you have to, it's the last resort. Again, if you can't figure it out, if you have any chashashos and it's a real potential for your pigul nefesh, you do whatever the fastest thing to do is. But under normal circumstances, it's very, very rare to have to do that. Then a person has to be careful when returning back from the hospital and Shabbos. Also, not so, no kosher. So it depends. Is there to be mocked the guy to drive himself back? Is a very, is this, it's, that, we're not going to discuss that either. But I'm talking about even having a goy drive you back. So it depends. Depends how far you're from the hospital. Depends how late it is in the day. Depends what the status of the person is. So let's say if it's an adult, had to go to the hospital. He broke his arm or something. Chashash b'ruach nefesh, he's going to cut, who knows what, cut an artery. So they take him to the hospital. So he gets himself in a cast. And now he has to want to go back home. He's a perfectly healthy guy with a broken arm. So it depends how far the hospital is. So the hospital's a 20-minute walk from his house. So he walks back on Shabbos. So what's the big tzarech? If it's a little kid who broke his leg, so what are you going to do? So sometimes you have to take a goy shikab service back. Again, so each case has to be assessed. It's not a freebie, not a hefkevel. The person's sick, all of a sudden, is a freebie to do whatever you want on Shabbos. So you have to figure out what the appropriate care is.
Why would you say to the child that stay in the hospital for the rest of Shabbos?
So it depends. Sometimes a person staying in the hospital for longer, that itself, he may well be in the category of a cholish emer sadara, because if he just got all battered up, depending what happened, so it may be very, very uncomfortable. The kid's screaming and he's going to sit in the waiting room for another 20 hours, so he may be in the category of a cholish emer. You may become a cholish emer sadara. You become a cholish emer, you go crazy. So certain kinds of cases may fall into the category of a cholish emer sadara. And Amir Liyaka, maybe more. So again, it's case by case kind of basis.
So, I believe, from what I recall, in Hilchos Yontos, there's a Mishnah Berurah or Shaar HaTzion, talks about the Siman of Yom Tov Sheni Shel Golios. So I think he says there that you cannot do a Daraisa Mekava Achayat for a Cholish Ein Bo Sakona. It seems weird.
Right, because Mishnah Berurah paskins like the Shulchan Aruch, Mishnah Berurah was in Kerry Rusa Solak with Talstoy. Mishnah Berurah went with the regular Shulchan Aruch that says that you can't do a Daraisa Kalechayat, right? But Rosh Hashanah Zalman pointed out.
Even in Yom Tov
Sheni. Right, but the Yom points out, if you look at the Ramban, where this whole Mishnah Berurah Shulchan Aruch is coming from, right, it doesn't at all sound that way. And so Rosh Hashanah Zalman writes that those who are stuck can rely on the same Leital. Some Rabbanim are vehemently opposed to this, but Rosh Hashanah Zalman was, his quarter of Shemesh Shabbos is being made to love this Mishnah Zalman. One last thing, just in terms of Shabbos, then a general issue in terms of children, one has to be careful not to actively cause a child to do malacha on Shabbos. So if a little baby is standing there turning lights on and off, so then you're not going to stop him. Once he's a gil chinuch, chinuch v'yisurim is not that old. Once he understands a little bit what the word no means, some people don't understand no, they're 45 years old, they don't know what the word no means. But a little kid understands a little bit that he's not supposed to be doing these things, that's considered to be a gil chinuch v'yisurim. So you should stop him from being mechal Shabbos. But to actively tell a child to do Chil Shabbos for you, so that's a violation of the Seres Adipras. So that's for sure, Russell. So a lot of people are initial on this. They tell kids to carry for them, there's no air. They tell kids to turn lights for them. So these kinds of things are clearly out of line.
If a Kadashi Gil did do a
Yeah, yeah. So that's if a little baby does a malacha derech misasek, even that's a machlekes aposki. What is this nice Shabbos of misasek? But if the kid's old enough to know what's going on, that would be a problem. If you see a child doing a malacha, the child's a gil chinuch, is supposed to stop them. If it's your child, if it's somebody else's child, that's machlekes rishonim. What is this chinuch? We're going to slash it. Sukkah and base. Machlekes rishonim is a chinuch and somebody else's child. So the mishaburah puts a chayodim that says that it depends. That if it's a malacha deraisa, you should be machmir. If it's only misa derabbanan, then you have a right to be machmir.
code, would you not be allowed to like take a baby and put them close to like the light switcher?
So that's a different story. I'm allowed to take a baby and stand them next to the light and then figure out on his own what to do. That's not called be a dayim, because I'm not telling him what to do. If I tell a 5-year-old and say, go tell the light for me, that's a problem. The Gemara has a whole discussion at the end of Maseches Yevamos about once the keys to the Beis Medrash were, the keys to the shul were left in the wrong place, the shul was locked, there was no Erev, and they were left somewhere in the middle of the street, and they couldn't open the door to the shul. So the Gemara says that one of the Amoraim, or Pidah, said that bring some little children, bring the Tayyib, Tayyib means little boys, Tayyib means little girls, bring little boys, little girls to the street, let them play, and hopefully one of them will see the keys and pick up the keys, and the kids like to play with keys, and they'll open up the door, they'll open up the shul. So the Gemara says, that's not called Biyadayim, because I'm not telling him to carry the keys, I'm just putting him in a place where if he finds the keys, so they'll carry them. Apparently these kids were under the age of chinuch, they were little kids. So I know you see, you're laughing, you know the story I'm going to tell, right? You know, we'll end off with the story, it's a good way to remember everything we're talking about. So there's a famous maaseh that somebody asked the Satmar Rebbe, and they asked them, they don't understand the Gemara. He said, the Gemara says that they bring the little boys and little girls to play in the street. He says, well, what was that, Sneas? It's a co-ed playgroup. Why does the Gemara say bring the little girls and the little boys? So Satmar Rebbe responded, he said, the goal was that the kids should see the keys. So he said, if you just bring a bunch of boys, just going to play and run after each other, play, you know, fight with each other, no one's going to look down to see the keys. But if you bring the little girls, then all the little boys are so frum, they're not going to look at the girls, they're going to look down. So when they look down, they'll find the keys, and they'll open up the door. Okay, stop with
that. So, Summer Mankel, not even by a Higia,